Welcome to Alumni Evolution, the official podcast of the Kentucky Wesleyan College Alumni Association. Join us each week as we interview incredible alumni and friends and follow the evolution of their lives.
Hey, everybody, we're back again for another edition of Alumni Evolution, the official podcast of Kentucky Wesleyan Alumni. I am Doug Hoyt, and I have the privilege of being your host of this podcast. Today, I have a very special guest with me, Mr. Bart Darrell.
Well,
welcome.
Well, thanks for having me. This is quite an honor.
And I do say special because your storied history with Kentucky Wesleyan is something everybody likes to hear about.
Well, I don't know if it's storied or if it is a story or if it is boring.
Well, it's perhaps a little of all of it, but I'm pretty certain that given the fact that we went to school together, it is definitely storied.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, you know, the highlight is probably the fact that you and I graduated in the illustrious class of 1984.
That's right. None better since.
I haven't heard anybody give a good argument to the contrary.
So let's start there. Talk to us a little bit about your time here at Kentucky Wesleyan.
Well, my time at Kentucky Wesleyan really started when I was about 9 years old, when we moved from Texas, from Abilene, Texas, to Owensboro, because my father came to teach at Wesleyan. And so I started running around the front lawn and the grounds here at the campus then. And then no shock to anybody, probably, that I ended up a student here and studied business here at Kentucky Wesleyan and made the lifelong friends like you here. And it got me launched on what I would describe to this point as a very enjoyable career with a few different experiences. So I'm very indebted to Kentucky Wesleyan.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely wonderful life that began here. I know there was time before here, but those are memories. This is when it began and what it's about. Mm-hmm. So for our listeners, I think everybody probably knows your dad was Bob. Mm-hmm. That taught here for years and was an icon in the English world, created much of what exists today in the freshman English world.
Yeah, the freshman writing program here at Wesleyan was pretty much the creation of my father and Dr. John Combs, who also came from Texas at the same time we did. And it became a nationally ranked writing program. And I was smart enough to never take my father for a class. my older brother, Bob, who also graduated from Wesleyan, was an English major and took him every class he taught. And I've never understood why he would have done such a thing, but he did.
Well, yeah. So you took a different path. That's okay. So you started in 9 years old and playing on the front lawn, but then in 1980, your academic career started here.
My first class at Kentucky Wesleyan was the spring of 1979. I took freshman English while I was still in high school at Davis County High.
Okay.
From Dr. John Combs. That was my first college class. And that is why, in case you may have noticed, Doug, that during my time as president at Wesleyan, anytime I gave a speech or addressed an audience, that Dr. Combs was in that audience, I recognized him and thanked him because
absolutely,
he was my first professor in college.
And, yeah.
And I will say that Wesleyan got me ready for law school in ways I can never explain to people. There were people that were in my law school class at Louisville who, you know, may have thought they went to more prestigious schools than I. There were some folks from Stanford and Notre Dame and, you know, those kinds of things. But what I realized very quickly was that I had gotten as good or better an education than they did. And part of the reason was that Wesleyan, and Doug, you know this, and I'm sure it's been a big part of your success, your professional success, was that Wesleyan would not allow you, even if you wanted to be in the background. And we had to engage in class.
You're absolutely right.
We could not hide. And when I got to law school, there was so much engagement that it was, I wasn't the smartest, anywhere close to the smartest person in the class, but I was probably more comfortable engaging and communicating and debating and conversing than anybody there.
Knew how to put a sentence together, knew how to be in front of people.
Mm-hmm. I remember my last year at Wesleyan, my last semester, I had to get one class, Doug, to graduate. I had to get 3 hours of an elective, and I was working at the time, too. And the only class they could squeeze me in was an upper-level religion class. Mm. Everybody in there was headed to seminary, and I had no business in that class. I mean, I didn't have any prerequisites other than I had New Testament, as you did, and I think Old Testament. And Dr. Tom Rogers taught the class.
Absolutely.
And I recall we were up on one of the upper floors in the administration building, and he was grilling those really smart pre-seminarians about the reading assignment, which I will confess here and now, I had not read. And he was not getting the answer he wanted. He was not satisfied with these scholars and their answers. And if you know Dr. Rogers, he had on his blue blazer and his gray slacks, his booming voice. And he got frustrated and took a chair and put it over at the window and raised the window, climbed up in the windowsill. He was not a large man, and he got up in the windowsill. And he looked back at the students. We were in amazement. And he said, "I'm asking one more person. If I don't get what I want, I'm jumping."
Oh, jeez.
And I did a quick head count, Doug, and realized this was not going to end well for Dr. Rogers if he did what I thought he was going to do. I thought, "Don't do it, Dr. Rogers. Don't call on me." He said, "Mr. Darrell." I think I said something about Noah's Ark. I don't even know. Had nothing to do with anything. And he paused and he said, "Close enough." So I used to tell that joke at law school. I said, "I'm not afraid of these professors." I said, "I held the life of a Harvard educated theologian
right
in my hands, and I survived it." So,
yeah.
But that was the Wesleyan experience. You never knew what you were going to get or how it was going to benefit you later.
So that's exactly right, and not only that, the education and the benefits, but the friendships with those professors that lasted longer than the classroom time. You know, that's to me one of those things that I will never forget.
Yeah, and I'd love to hear who yours were, but there's one in particular for me, because I knew a lot of them because of my father, but there was one that I thought didn't like me, and it was Arthur Chesler.
Art Chesler.
He taught finance and economics and some business classes, and I took most of his because I was a business major, and I felt like he was really, really unnecessarily hard on me, and he would call on me in class and just, you know, he was disgusted, I thought, with my efforts. He would say things like, "Mr. Darrell, you actually believe what you just said," you know, that kind of thing, and got to where I think people dodged sitting by me in class because they didn't want guilt by association, but I got to law school, and those law professors love to pick on people. That's their job. And there were some really smart people that were having trouble with that the first semester. And they're like, "Boy, you know, Professor so-and-so's terrible." And I remember thinking, not that bad.
He's
and
nothing.
And that's when the light went on. And I thought, wait a minute. Now I know what Arthur Chesler was doing for me. So when I graduated, I came back to see him, went to his office. And he was sitting in that chair, first door on the right when you come in the faculty office building. And I said, "Professor, I'm here for two reasons. One, I'm here to apologize to you. I need to apologize for all of the horrible things I've hoped would happen to you over the years." And he laughed. And I said, "But seriously, I'm here to thank you because now I get what you did. And I want to thank you." And he said this, Doug. He sat in his chair and he kind of leaned back a little further. And he said, "I knew where you wanted to go." He knew I wasn't going to be the smartest person in that class, but he knew that average was not going to be good for me and I wouldn't like it. So he was going to make me the toughest kid in that class.
He was going to challenge you.
And I take with a lot of pride in saying, I think he did make me the toughest one in my class, and it worked.
Yeah. That's the experience that I think a lot of people get at Kentucky Wesleyan. One of those for me, and there were several, was Lee Dew.
Great scholar and a great man.
He's with a thinker, and he challenged you.
That's the word. It was you said he's a thinker, he would challenge your mind.
He would. Mm-hmm. He was my advisor, so I was with him all 4 years that I was here. And we spent, I've told many people, we spent a good deal of time drinking coffee in the sub together too. And so we were together outside of class and inside of class. Mm-hmm. And
but you're right. People don't get that everywhere.
You don't get that. You don't get that. And that's one of the special things about Kentucky Wesleyan. So you finished your time here and you went to law school at U of L.
Yes.
At that was right after Wesleyan. Yes. So a smooth transition.
Went straight into law school.
Mm-hmm. And that was 3 years.
3 years.
What did you do then? Where'd you go? Where'd that path take
when,
you?
When I graduated from my last year in law school, I was interviewing for positions, and I knew that I did not want to go to the big firms in D.C. or Philadelphia or Atlanta, because what they do there is they put you in a library for 5 years researching. That would have been really bad for me, Doug, because, number one, I would have just rotted in there. That's not my personality. Number two, I wasn't good at that. They would not have liked my work product. I wanted to be in the mix. I need to be in the courtroom. And I knew myself at that point. And so I was interviewing with mid-sized firms, and I thought I was coming back to Owensboro and pretty much had that worked out. And then I interviewed for practice, a practice interview, just to say I did it, with a firm out of Bowling Green, Kentucky, one of the oldest firms in the in Western Kentucky. And I just really hit it off with them, and they said, hey, if you'll take a job here, we'll have you in the courtroom as soon as you get your law license. And I started thinking about it, and I thought, you know, this is what I need to do for another reason. And it really broke my mother's heart at the time. She thought I'd be back in Owensboro immediately. But I knew that I thought this is really intriguing opportunity, because if I go and do it here, if I can make it there, I'll know that it was because of my effort. And because of me, because I knew no one there.
Yeah.
And didn't everyone have a doubt in my mind as whether I was successful, because, you know, people maybe knew my family growing up or knew me growing up. And I didn't want to be remembered necessarily as the kid that played basketball or baseball at Davis County High or went to Wesleyan at that point. But it was going to be someplace where it was all me. I had to make it.
And that firm was?
Bell, Orr, Ayers, and Moore. I'm still what they call of counsel with that firm. I was with that firm for 25 years until I came to Wesleyan to work here and as president.
And so while there, what law did you practice?
I represented a lot of school districts around Kentucky.
Including
Davis County. And then I tried civil cases. I represented doctors and businesses and that kind of thing. I probably tried over 150 jury trials, which is the most fun thing in the world for me. And I'm also a mediator. I would mediate cases for the court system. And that was pretty much my career path there. And there were about 15 of us in that firm. There still are.
And you still, so of counsel, what's that mean for those of us that aren't in the business?
It can mean a lot of things for me, because I have a full-time position with Owensboro Health and the Health Force Kentucky. Now, it just means they can call me and consult with me if they need me. I have so many relationships with the client base of the firm, and that I can help solidify some of those things. And if they really need me to bounce something off of, I'll do that.
Okay. And so that 24 years you said?
1987 through till 2000. I was a partner in that firm till 2013 when I got to Wesleyan.
So 2013, mm-hmm.
So 26 years.
Your life changes a little bit.
Yeah, just a little.
And you move back to Owensboro.
Mm-hmm.
Come back to Kentucky Wesleyan.
Right. I had served on the selection committee for my predecessor here, Dr. Turner. I was on the board of trustees here at Wesleyan at the time and served in that capacity. And Dr. Turner had asked me a couple of times after he was hired if I'd consider coming back in a position. I said, no, I love what I'm doing. I'm doing what I need to do. And my mother became ill. She was still in Owensboro. She was suffering from Alzheimer's and dementia, and I'm the closest of the four kids geographically. And it got to the point where she really needed help, and Dr. Turner came back again and said, hey, why don't you come back? I'm going to ask you again. I'll make you, I'll make you an executive vice president, and I'll teach you everything I know about being a college president, because I'm going to retire in 4 years. And my mother, her father, who was my hero, was a college a Methodist college president in Texas. And she had always wanted me to be a college president because of him. She thought I was the one that fit that more than any, the others. They're all great at other things. So something was telling me that, yeah, I need to do this. And so I just pulled the trigger and walked away and came up here. And then as it turned out, Dr. Turner retired much less than 4 years. It was a matter of months that I kind of got word that he was going to retire. And my mother passed away, and her funeral was on one day, and I was named president the next.
Oh, wow.
And that was in September of 2014.
2014.
Or September, I believe it was 14, yeah.
And so you were ready for that, I'm sure.
I was blindsided by it at first. Yeah. And I remember after they held a press conference and introduced me as the president, I came in the went in the president's office there and sat down at that. You've been in there, Doug. There's a big conference table in there. And I sat there and thought, now what? Because I honestly really didn't think I had any idea how to be one.
Yeah.
And but the good news was that we had an incredible team here, and which allowed me to do the things that I did know how to do, and that was how to be an advocate for Kentucky Wesleyan, you know, and how to create culture, maybe redefine some culture, and how to get us engaged in the community so that we're more tied to more people. And I felt like I was able to lure a couple other people to join the team, people like Sean Tomes and, you know, Eddie Kinney and some folks like that who are still here. And we were able to, I could stay out of the way of some really talented people and enable us to grow in just about every regard. So we were really proud of what we did.
So president of a college, you know, that's a, it's prestigious, you know. It's one of those jobs that not very many people get the opportunity to have. What do you think your impact on Kentucky Wesleyan was?
I don't know. I hope that I had some. I'd like to think that the impact that I had would reflect my passion and love for the school and how important it is. And I hope that my impact would be that it was received well by others here, the students, faculty, other administration, and that that was allowed to get spread and grow and become part of who, you know, more of who we are. And I'd like to think that's what we did. And I'd like to think that we created some institutional swagger that still exists. And because I do believe that it's very, very important for Wesleyan people to walk with great pride in who they are and what education they've received, because it's worth walking pride, with pride about. It's worth celebrating. It's worth having, really having a lot of confidence in what you're carrying with you out in the world that will help make a difference in the lives of others.
Well said. So, president for how long?
5 years. Yeah, almost through 2020, till end of 2019.
And then what? What comes next?
Well, I left from there. I was practicing law back with Bellor, Ayers, and Moore. And then the next thing you know, I was back doing what I my original plan was to be at Wesleyan 2 years. And I stayed 5 because I had so much fun. And my last year, I kind of helped transition and got to play a little bit of part, I hope, in selecting Dr. Mitzel. He was my first choice. I'm president emeritus now, so he and I talk all the time, and he's doing a wonderful job. But then went back into private practice, and then Mark Marsh, who is the president and CEO of Owensboro Health, called me, and I'd known Mark for many years, and it actually encouraged him to pursue the position of president and CEO because I thought he'd be a great fit here. The time he was in Orlando running a hospital system, and he actually did apply, of course, and got the position. And so he called me up and he said, I need to talk to you about something. So I said, well, I'll be in Owensboro. I think it was on a Wednesday. I said, I'll meet you wherever you want. So he came up with this, he told me about this concept they had. They said, we want to try to build a healthcare innovation center that will involve 9 colleges and universities and 16 counties of school districts and try to widen the pathways for healthcare professionals and help attack this healthcare professional shortage that we have nationwide. And it sounded, he said, I want you because you've been a college president and you, in your law practice, you worked with school districts. So, you know, all ends of the spectrum. And it sounded like such an ambitious thing. I laughed. I said, you figure out how to get that done. And then you call me. Well, he called me about 3 weeks later.
Lo and behold, and he got done.
And he said, the state's investing $38 million in this project and you're going to build it. So I came back a little over a year ago and I was the only employee of Health Force Kentucky. It wasn't even called that then. And so we started from scratch and created a 501c3. And now we're up and running and we're getting ready to renovate a building to have the center itself. We've already built a mobile lab that goes out all over rural Kentucky to give high tech education. And we just commissioned our second mobile lab. It's called Health Force 2. This is hot off the press, Doug. Happened Friday.
Excellent.
Because of demand. So we have probably 6 employees now, and we are up and running and hopefully going to do some things that nobody's ever done anywhere.
So talk about that a little bit. I'm familiar with this initiative, but I don't know that our listeners are. And quite frankly, this has the real possibility of being not just one of a kind in Owensboro, Kentucky, or this region, but in the world.
I think that's pretty fair to say. There are lots of simulation centers around the country. And what that is, for folks who are not familiar, it's where you can create real live healthcare settings with high technology and have a different kind of education for maybe it's radiology technicians, maybe it's nursing, maybe it's respiratory therapy, whatever it might be. But most of those initiatives involve a hospital, let's say, and a college or university. Mm-hmm. Well, we're operating under the philosophy that's probably too late to really expand these pipelines and create more. We're going back as far as elementary school to try to create curiosity in kids, curiosity for science and for healthcare. And if we can connect when they get to high school where these kids are working in this high-tech simulation experience while taking
higher ed
classes.
Which is what they love to do anyway.
They want, it's all gaming technology.
That's right.
You know, and for example, Doug, we've got in the center, and we've already got it in our mobile labs, we'll have immersion rooms. And what those are, it gives us the ability to create 3,000 minimum, 3,000 healthcare settings on the walls, and it's interactive. And I can take a picture of the emergency room, let's say at Owensboro Health, and upload it. That room then becomes the emergency room at Owensboro Health, and it's interactive. So we can work on a mannequin, and it'll tell us on the walls if we've done the right things. We can pick the right drugs on the walls, and it'll tell us if we've made the right choice or not. What are the consequences? We can test in this room. So it's going to change the way people learn and the way people are assessed. But the beautiful part about that one, that's just one small piece of technology we're doing, is by creating a simulation of a real place where somebody's going to work, we can not only give someone the skills, let's say in Muhlenberg County, Kentucky, but we can also train them that with that skill in the place they're going to do it.
The exact room.
Right. So I believe that comfort breeds confidence. Confidence breeds higher performance. So I think we can create those situations where people are more comfortable in learning, they get more confident quicker, and their performance then on the first day on the job in helping and treating the sick is better and at a higher level. The other thing it does is we're going to be able to help people stay in rural Kentucky. They may not ever want to leave Webster County. Well, guess what? they don't, there are jobs there in healthcare. They're in demand there too.
Absolutely. People so get sick everywhere.
If we can help people stay in where they want to live, instead of having to move to Nashville or, you know, Louisville or someplace for a job, that helps rural Kentucky grow and prosper. So it raises the median incomes because these are high paying jobs. It raises the median academic achievement levels, raises the cultural levels. It just makes healthier communities. And I think my belief is the quickest way to kill rural Kentucky is to have a lack of access to quality health care and lack of access to quality education. We want to solve both those problems.
One of the unique things about this initiative over some of the others I'm familiar with is, as you mentioned earlier, there's usually a collaboration between a hospital and a college or university, perhaps two, but not 9 or 10.
You know what's funny, Doug, about that is I was invited to Vanderbilt University's National Healthcare Conference a few months ago. They wanted me to come down and talk about what we were trying to do. I thought I gave a wonderful speech, Doug, of course, right? I mean, right. I think it's great. We prepare those things, and I nailed it. Apparently not, because they didn't ask me one question. The audience didn't. Not one question about what I spoke about. What they wanted to know about was how in the world we had all these universities and public school systems on the same page, working collaboratively.
Yes.
And it's the one thing I couldn't try to figure out a way to take credit for, Doug. I said, you know what? That's just who we are. And that's the truth.
But that is one of the unique features about this initiative that is going to make it very renowned, but very successful, in one humble opinion.
No, I think you're spot on. And I've been amazed at the level of engagement from the universities, you know, that usually you think of competing against each other. But just so people understand the schools involved, we've got Kentucky Wesleyan, of course, right at the forefront. The University of Louisville, Western Kentucky University, Brescia University, and then the 5 community college campuses of Owensboro, Henderson, Elizabethtown, Hopkinsville, and
Madisonville.
Yeah, and they are working really well together.
And then the high schools.
Yeah, the P-12 systems in the 16 counties that kind of come out from Davis County, it's as far west as Union, as far south as Butler and Logan, and as far east, probably as Hardin County. So it's a big area.
Well, congratulations on having this opportunity and for taking it to the level that it is. And it's only in its infancy stages today.
I'm glad you said that, Doug, because this is not a short-term proposition. We're not trying to do something that has a 2-year impact. This is something that's going to be built out over the next, you know, decades. And we want this to still be around 30 years from now. And I think the concept that we've employed here, I think can be applied to other areas of education and training. I think it can be in education. I mean, teacher education. I think it can be about any industry you want. So I think there's no limits to this kind of collaboration. And I'd hope that a byproduct of what we're doing will be that model.
Well, and the whole concept of delivering it, meeting them where they are, has great value in anything you're trying to do, whether it is healthcare or education or any field. And that's what you're doing, is delivering it where they are. You're meeting them where they are and not asking somebody to come to you.
Yeah, we don't give diplomas. Health Force Kentucky, we don't give degrees. What we are doing is going to our educational partners and saying, we want to respond to what you need and what the market demands. We will help you do what you're doing.
Right. Fantastic. Fantastic initiative. I'm a little bit familiar with it, but I think as it unfolds, it's going to be like an onion. As the layers get peeled back, I think more and more gets revealed about how successful and how needed it is.
Well, the neat thing is the people that we've brought into the team so far, they're people from all over the country who are really skilled in this simulation education. You know, the director of internal operations is a fellow named Bruce Williams, who we got from Texas A&M University, who's built three or four of these type facilities. So, and we've gotten a simulation manager from Northern Kentucky University who's done this different places, been in this over a decade. So we've excited people who are wanted by everybody to come and be part of this.
Even more exciting. So, you know, there's more to this story, I think. And that's what I want to kind of transition into, and maybe you can tie some of this together, but I'd like to talk about family. Mm-hmm. We've talked about your dad, a little bit about your mom, but you can tell me a little more, you know, what her story is. And then you've got some brothers and sisters too that might have part of this story.
My mother, I hope everybody says this about their mother, but there is no better than my mom. She passed away in 2014. She was a first grade teacher here in Owensboro for 31 years. Just an unbelievable human being. The most positive person I've ever met. Then I have two brothers and a sister. I have a brother who's 18 months older. He's a Wesleyan grad. I mentioned him, Bob. He is vice president of Smithfield, if you know the bacon and ham company. He's in Virginia Beach. I have a brother a year younger, Bracken, who he was president and CEO of Logitech in Silicon Valley and just recently took over after 10 years there, agreed to be the president and CEO of VF, which owns, you know, North Face and Nautica and all that stuff. Then my sister, Shelley, who's a year and a half behind Bracken. She's a lawyer like me. She is a general counsel for the Fayette County public schools here in Kentucky. And that's where we all started.
And so how do you think the connection with Silicon Valley help in this and healthcare initiative?
Well, my brother Bracken, we talked a lot about that. I told him what opportunity that they'd presented me and wanted me to do. And I said, it sounds exciting. And he was really into it because at Logitech, they are everybody knows that, you know, your keyboard may be the Logitech mouse and all that, but they are also big into gaming. And he said, you know, the thing that happened during COVID, Logitech realized that they were all of a sudden a healthcare company and an education company too, because their technology from gaming was now being used in healthcare simulation, and people were using their video conferencing for education and visiting people in the hospitals. And so, you know, his theory was that we had gone in 18 months of COVID where we might have ended up 10 years from now without COVID from a technology standpoint.
That's the trick
was getting the human beings to catch up to that technology. We still haven't yet. We're working on it. So, that there's a lot of connections and similarities between what he was doing and the technology that we're employing right now. You know, people used to say, they'd get mad at their kids. Oh my God, you know, I have a son and he would, you know, he's like all of them likes to play video games. And people would say, oh, you know, my kid's playing too much video games. And now we're saying, thank goodness they were, because they're picking up on this stuff so fast.
That's exactly right. So we got to circle back now because you mentioned your son.
Hmm.
We have to talk about Michael a little bit.
Yeah, Michael is Michael and I adopted each other when he was a senior in high school. I met Michael when he was 9 years old. He didn't have a dad. I didn't have any kids. And we just kind of acted like it for a while and then made it legal when he was a senior in high school. And Michael is... got his undergraduate degree from Western Kentucky University, where he played baseball for them. He's a pitcher. And then did grad school at Jacksonville University, where he also pitched for them. And now he just completed his rookie year of professional baseball with the Los Angeles Angels. He made it all the way to Double A in his rookie year. So he's in Florida training in the offseason. He'll go back to spring training in Phoenix in February. And we'll see, you know, I'll see how far he'd go. But he's
still with the Angels organization.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And so we'll see how he does. But I'm most proud that he has his education. And that's the most important thing to me.
It is. And I think I remember not long ago you telling a story about that. with him in his locker room.
Yeah, well, that was an interesting Michael story. Was never somebody he would never, I was always school, you know, and he was, it wasn't his number one thing, but he worked really hard at it and did fine. Really proud of that with him. But, I think I got on his nerves a lot as he was growing up and all through college.
But isn't that what a parent's for?
That's what they're supposed to do. Yeah, it's supposed to be a nuisance in that regard. I guess I was good at that. But he called me from spring training last year in Phoenix, and he had just gotten there. And he said, hey, I think I'm the only one here with an undergraduate degree, much less a master's. And my first thought was, oh, thank heavens he finally figured this out. He gets it now. He has figured out why I pushed that. And I said, well, I guess I don't look so stupid now, do I? And his response was, well, not for that reason anyway. So I hung up on him.
Yeah.
But, so I wish I hadn't said that. I could have just assumed that he really appreciated me. I'm kidding, though. I'm very proud of his academic performance, and I'm very proud of his perseverance in professional baseball as well.
And he's a pitcher.
He is.
And doing quite well.
So far, you get to Double-A in your rookie year. That's not bad. So he's got a shot.
That's not bad. Now, I'm not real familiar with how far people will normally get in their rookie year.
Well, he was promoted three times in his rookie year.
First year.
Yeah. And so there's only one more promotion he could get before the major leagues. So I don't know if that'll ever happen, but he can always, at a minimum, say he made it pretty far.
But it seems to be working toward that way.
So far, they seem to like him, and, you got to perform and stay healthy.
Well, good. So you now make your home in Owensboro?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you stay engaged with Wesleyan?
Yes, I try to. None of us are as engaged as we ought to be, except you. But
I don't know about that.
I try to stay very engaged. If I'm called upon to help recruit students, like they need me to come make a speech, they need me to, whatever they need me to do, I'm always up for doing that. And Dr. Mitzel and I talk frequently, and I continue to be amazed at how bright he is and how visionary he is. And he understands the climate of higher education. And he was a perfect, in my view, a perfect person to follow me. And we have different skill sets. And so we're very comfortable sharing ideas. And he calls on me when he's got something he thinks I can do that could help. And I'm always ready for that.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, we are coming to the near the end of our time together, but I always like to ask my guests a question. I'm going to ask the question, then I'm going to tell you why. Let's think about it, and then you can answer it. Tell me about a favorite vacation. Now, I asked that because Brendan and I are nearing the end of our careers, maybe sometime, slowing down at least. And as we do, we like to travel. And so I'm just stealing ideas from my guests.
This is easy for me. And I guess I didn't know it qualified as a vacation until you just asked me. But this does involve Michael. When Michael was signed by the Angels and was sent to spring training, we had no idea whether he would be cut after 30 days, and if not cut, where he would go. So he couldn't take his car. So Michael didn't get cut, and he gets sent to San Bernardino Valley, California, in the California League. So I had to take his car out there, Doug. So I drove his car from Kentucky through, I think it's 9 states, maybe 10 states.
Yeah, a couple thousand
through
miles.
New Mexico, yes. Ended up through New Mexico and Arizona to get to Southern California. And it was 29 hours total. I don't recommend it, but it was a great experience. And when I got there, the reason it's the greatest is I get there and it's opening weekend of the season. And I was going to get to see 3 games. And after 2 days, 2 games, Michael has not even seen the mound. At that time, they were using him as a relief pitcher.
Okay.
He is now a starting pitcher and all that. But at the time, they thought he was going to be the closer, as you hear about. So the third game, we're in the eighth inning, and he still hasn't pitched. And I feel so bad for him because I'm thinking, oh, he was so excited to me coming out here to watch him get to play in a as a professional baseball player. I'd never seen him in person as a pro, of course. And here he's not even going to pitch. Well, somehow his team makes a miraculous comeback, and they tie the game. And it goes into the ninth, and here comes Michael in the game. And he struck out the first three hitters he faced. And they go to the 10th, and he has the bases loaded on him with no outs. And he strikes out the side again to win the game.
Oh, wow.
And that made it the greatest vacation of my life.
Absolutely.
It's not even debatable.
One that we can't duplicate.
No,
but is
you can't.
A great
you
story.
Can't say I'm going to go back there again.
No.
But the really coolest thing about it was there was a man sitting behind me for the other team. And he'd been behind me the whole game. And I guess he saw me perk up a little bit and get on the edge of my seat when Michael came in the game. And he tapped me on the shoulder and he said, Do you know this pitcher or something? I said, yeah, a little bit. And he said, well, what is your connection? I said, well, that's actually my son. First game as a pro. The guy said, oh, my. So after Michael wins the game, the guy's walking out, and he stops and turned back and looked at me. And he smiled, and he said, hey, don't ever bring him back here again.
Oh, great story. Great story. Yeah. Well, Bart, thank you so much for spending a little time with us. I always like to give my guests the last word, so it's your turn.
Well, first, I just want to say, Doug, thank you for your friendship, and thank you for your commitment to Wesleyan. I know all the things you've done. You make an extraordinary impact, and just doing this, things like this, is so valuable to the mission. And it's an honor to call you a classmate. And so I just want to say thanks for all you're doing, and thanks for letting me play a very small part of it here with you today.
Thank you for those kind words, and appreciate you giving a little bit of your time to tell your story and share some information with our listeners. I'm confident that they're going to find great value in this. So with that, until we are back again, take care.
This has been another episode of Alumni Evolution, the official podcast of the KWC Alumni Association, hosted by Doug Hoyt, class of 1984. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to follow the Alumni Association on social media at KWC Alumni. See you next time, Panthers.